As usual, it was a very mundane item that signals a story about crime in the Black Museum. And tonight, that story has to do with two missing girls. We have also a leaky army truck and the khaki handkerchief from the Black Museum. Your host, Orson Welles.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, the repository of death. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a teapot, a sewing needle, a folding camera, all are touched by murder. Now, here's a handkerchief. A khaki handkerchief. Soldier's handkerchief. It's a common enough sort of thing during the war.
A handkerchief, Stark. Fairly clean, if a bit moldy.
That would be from exposure, Thompson. Looks like army issue.
It is, but no hero used it. You can bet on that.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are at the Black Museum in Scotland Yard. Just come into this silent room. Outside, the Thames is busy with London's river traffic, and just upstairs, police communications tap from the teletypes, ring from the telephones. But here, as I say, is silence. Now, here's a length of garden hose. Once it was connected to an exhaust of a car. From there up through the floorboards. The time was winter. The driver rode with all the windows closed, and the car crashed. The man died. It wasn't exactly an accident, no. It was murder. Here's a German Mauser. War trophy, heavy gun. Strange. A tiny woman held it with two hands, smudged her own fingerprints. She was found out. Her hands gave her away. The paraffin test, you know, for gunpowder smoke. Ah, here we are. Here it is, the khaki handkerchief. Originally, it was intended for camouflage. Fairly shouted for recognition at the right time in the wrong place. Yet the trouble first appeared as the commonplace ringing of a telephone.
Hello?
Mrs. Lyons?
Yes?
This is Liz Hart. How are you?
Fine. And you?
All right. I'm a little worried, though. Kathy's so late getting home. Is she with Doris?
Well, they're not here. I thought Doris was with Kathy at your house.
Oh, dear. Now, where have they got to?
Oh, probably stop at one of their friends' houses. Now, don't you worry. Kathy will come home with my Doris, and both of them will be full of
story. So ordinary, so commonplace. One mother worries, the other doesn't. Later, around six, the worrier, Mrs. Hart, Kathy's mother, speaks to her husband.
You'll have to speak to Kathy when she gets home.
Isn't she home? It's practically dinner time. I thought she was in her room.
She's off somewhere. Oh, John, I'm so worried.
You call the places where she might be?
Hours ago. No one's seen her.
Well, we'll have to wait until 6:30. Then I suppose we'll have to start looking for her.
Oh, when will Kathy learn to let us know?
6:30. No Kathy, no word from Kathy. This time the telephone rings in the Hart household. Mrs. Lyons is calling Mrs. Hart.
Yes. I assumed you'd call me if Doris turned up with Kathy at your house. Oh, dear, I wonder where they can have gotten to.
A frantic Mrs. Hart cradles the telephone, looks to her husband. Together they leave the house, go out into the darkening street to ring doorbells.
sorry to disturb you, but I'm trying to find my girl.
But the Carters haven't seen Kathy.
Excuse us, old man, but our Kathy seems to be among the unaccounted for.
No, the Bradleys haven't seen Kathy.
Sorry to bother you. Have you seen anything of Arlo?
No. The Corbetts haven't seen Kathy.
Oh, please. I'm almost frantic. Where's my... Oh.
No one has seen Kathy. No one's seen Doris. Word is getting around now. The rumor's spread. The time grows later. All of Penn, rustic Penn in Buckinghamshire, is buzzing now. At the inn, the tap room is crowded. Closing time draws near. Still, no word.
Penn Inn, landlord speaking.
Oh, this is John Hart. Look, Lyons and I are together at my place. Do you think some of the men would help us start a search?
Well, I'll ask them, Mr. Hart. I'm sure they will. Now, you stay right where you are. We'll be along very soon. Can I have your attention, men? Your attention, men. Hart and Lyons need help. They want to start a search. Now, how many of you fellas will help? After all, neighbors are neighbors. And if we can...
So it begins. The long, hard search continues. It's 6 hours now they've been missing. It's dark, very little moon. The lanterns of the searchers move around the village of Penn, through the fields and the clumps of trees, in ever-widening circles. The men beat the fields. At the Hart home, two mothers wait... wait. And wait.
Yes?
Nothing yet, dear. Try not to worry.
Nothing yet.
The sun rides high above the fields and woods of Buckinghamshire. Sun passes its course, descending behind the hills to the west. Already the searchers, hundreds of them now, have moved outward from Penn, some 4 miles outward. The night is coming on. The doorbell rings.
Yes?
Just on my way to the inn, ma'am, for more lanterns. Just to tell you, we'll keep at it all night, if need be.
And there's nothing yet.
Night again. Now the police are in the search, and with them a group of soldiers from a nearby camp. Steadily, monotonously, the men work, their voices subdued, the lanterns bobbing and weaving over the countryside. Outward, always outward from Penn. 5 miles now, 6 miles. As the radius lengthens, there's more ground to cover. False dawn grays the sky to the east, and the morning star low in the west begins to pale.
Over here, mate! This way! Hello!
Found something, matey?
I found something.
Yeah?
Covered up leaves they were. Just behind me here.
Found. The weary men brought the terribly tragic news back to Penn. In the little wood with its running stream where the bodies were found, two of Scotland Yard's inspectors, Thompson and Stark, took over together. Now is the time for professionals at manhunting.
What have we got, Stark?
Not much. Barely anything to go on. Gas mask container, wooden, out near the road. I don't think they were killed here, do you?
No, chances are against that. One of the men brought me this. A handkerchief, Stark. Fairly clean, if a bit moldy.
That would be from exposure, Thompson. Looks like army issue.
It is, but no hero used it. You can bet on that.
There are tire marks and an oil patch over to the right. Truck tires. Double rear wheels. Army truck, it looks like.
Plaster casts.
The men are making them now.
Army truck, army handkerchief. Anything else?
Not yet.
All right, let's get out of here. We've got a killer to find.
They know the routine, these two. But grimly, they set about the work. Stark takes the gas mask container, the plaster casts, the handkerchief, to the experts at the yard. Thompson stays on in Penn. He visits a different kind of yard.
Doris and Kathy were once my pupils, Inspector. I have a very personal reason for wanting to help you. But just how can I?
It doesn't need me to tell you, miss, how observant children can be. Now, it occurred to me that some of the kiddies in your school who live near the Hart's home might have noticed something unusual on their way back from school. Of course, it's only a shot in the dark, but a child might remember something that a grown-up would forget.
I see what you mean, Inspector.
Right then. Now, who in your class lives near the Harts?
Let me see now. Linda Carter. Oh, yes, and Kenneth Bradley. They're playing just over there. Come with me.
Now then, what's your name, young lady?
Linda. Linda Carter.
And yours, my lad?
Kenneth Bradley, sir.
I understand you two both live in the same street as the Harts.
Yes, sir. I live next door. Kenneth's a couple of houses down.
Right, Kenneth?
Yes, sir.
Now, I know you'd like to help me if you could. I think your teacher told you I'm from Scotland Yard.
She sure did. You don't look like a detective.
Detectives usually don't look like detectives. Now, let me tell you something. We're looking for a truck. A large, heavy truck.
An army truck, maybe?
Maybe. Why, did you see one, say, day before yesterday?
Yes, sir. At the crossroads. Just standing there.
Oh, I saw it, too. It was a big one.
Oh, anyone in it?
Just the driver. He had an awful red face. And he had glasses on with silver rims. He was sitting there smoking.
Can you tell me anything about the truck?
I just remember the man in it.
It looked like a wireless truck, but it didn't have any aerial. There were those big double wheels on the back, and a number 44 on the door, and a red and blue square on one side, and the tailboard had some letters. JB, I think. And on the front bumper, there was BAT, CPM.
Battery C, prime mover. Anything else, Kenneth?
Not that I can think of, sir.
No, sir.
How old do you think the driver was, Linda?
Oh, 26.
You seem very sure. Did you ask him?
No, sir. But he looked about my father's age, and Daddy's 26. I heard him say so.
Thank you, Linda. You too, Ken. You've been very helpful. When you come to London, I'll see to it that you're shown through the yard. You'll like that, I'm sure, eh?
Inspector Thompson sought out his colleague, Stark, at Scotland Yard.
I've got good descriptions, the truck and the driver. How about you, old man?
Laundry mark and the handkerchief. Print on gas mask container, that's all. Anybody seen them in the truck?
A man and a woman, about a mile apart, along the line from the school towards where they were found.
Any numbers in the truck?
Battery, regiment, and division insignia.
That laundry mark's going through the mill. H2503 is being checked in every laundry in the county of Buckingham.
Good. I'll get on to Army Intelligence. We'll find that truck, the outfit that uses it, and the man who drives it. A leaky axle drips oil, does it? We'll see about that.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum. Now it was routine, except for the unforgettable sight of leaf-shrouded bodies in the wood. The mechanics of tracing a laundry mark are routine. The preservation of plaster casts of tire marks, that's routine, grim routine. With an inevitability about it, pursuing the routine, Inspector Thompson called Army Intelligence and spoke with a colonel whose main function was liaison with the civilian police.
Those are the details, Colonel.
Well, I have it all down. Large number 44, red and blue square, JB on the tailboard.
Yes.
Battery C, PM on the front bumper.
That's it.
Sounds like one of those Fords and 6x6s we've been getting for our field artillery. I'll call you back, Inspector.
Thank you.
Like war, crime detection is largely a matter of waiting for information, waiting for results when the wanted alarms are sent out, waiting for a suspect to appear at a certain place. And now Thompson and Stark waited for answers to their inquiries. In a matter of hours, the answers began to come in.
There's a report on the laundry mark, Thompson. Ties in with a series given an army outfit stationed about 5 miles outside of Penn Village.
It begins to fit.
Patiently and grimly, the two men went on waiting. Once again, the telephone.
Inspector Thompson here.
Colonel Gardner, Inspector. I have your information.
Here he comes, Stark. Good. Go ahead, Colonel.
That truck apparently belongs to the 44th Battalion Devonshire Blues, a Battery C prime mover.
Where is that outfit, sir?
They've been in camp 5 miles outside Penn Village. They've just been moved to Yoxford on the south coast for further field training.
Thank you, Colonel.
Shall I advise the CO down there to expect you?
If you would. It should take us about 2 hours.
You move fast, don't you? I'll tell him. And good hunting. Hope you get your man.
Thank you again, sir. If he's still with that outfit, we'll get him. If he's still alive, we'll get him. Yoxford, Stark. Get a car and a driver. We're going to the country.
Traffic was light and gasoline rationed England. Some 2 hours later, Thompson and Stark conferred with the major commanding the battalion.
Yes, we do have a prime mover with a leaky axle, gentlemen. As a matter of fact, it's in the shed just outside.
May we see it, Major?
Yes, of course. This way.
I have the tire cast, Stark.
Good.
And our accommodations are still a bit primitive. No proper garage facilities. We just moved into this setup day before yesterday.
We understand, Major. You've been having much trouble with that truck?
Oh, yes, yes. A few days ago, just before we broke camp near Penn, and that's over in Buckinghamshire.
Yes, we know the place.
We released the truck to the maintenance depot. Apparently, there isn't much they can do with it. The main differential is a problem. Ah, well, there we are.
JB on the tailboard.
Have a look at the inside, will you? I'll take the tires and the markings.
Check.
44 on the door, yes. Big enough, the leg could hardly miss it. Red and blue square.
Our battery shoulder patch, Inspector.
Yes, I thought so. Markings all checked. Let me see now. The tires.
Now, fall in here, Thompson.
Yes, tires checked with the cast, Stark.
Well, we expected that. Here's something on the tarpaulin.
What do you make of these stages?
Want a guess, old man?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine, and it'll be confirmed by pathology.
Blood. I think we're through here, Major. May we go back to your office, please?
Blood on the tarpaulin, crumpled up and tossed into a corner of the truck.
I don't think they were killed here, do you?
No, chances are against that. No blood around here.
But blood on the tarpaulin in the truck. The two detectives and the Major went back to the orderly room. Oh,
I know. I think we'd better see the driver of that truck, Major.
Oh, yes, of course. Sergeant Carroll.
Yep.
Do you know who drives the prime mover for Battery C?
That'll be Driscoll, sir.
Oh, where is he now?
Oh, I expect he's in the battery day room, sir.
Oh, bring him over, will you? With his gear, duffel bag, the whole outfit.
Yes, sir.
The sergeant turned and left. The Major with Thompson and Stark waited silently, each busy with his own thoughts.
An army is a cross-section of the population, they say. If this Driscoll did this thing, part of that cross-section, I suppose.
That blood stain. I hope there's enough for pathology to type it.
Laundry marks. His shirts and underwear ought to have the same mark as the handkerchief, if he's the man.
In the day room of Battery C, the situation was normal. The sergeant walked in without attracting too much attention.
Oh, here you are, Driscoll.
What's up, Sarge?
You are. Major wants you.
Well, what's wrong now?
He didn't tell me. Let's get over to quarters first.
Well, what for?
Major wants to see your gear. All of it.
Oh.
Let's go.
Was the waiting over? Out of the seeming anonymity of the army, had they found their man, and so quickly?
In my office, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Oh! Colonel Driscoll, Major.
Thank you, Sergeant. Dismiss. At ease, Driscoll.
Thank you, sir.
This is Inspector Thompson and Inspector Stark, Scotland Yard. They have some questions, Driscoll. Answer them.
I'll try, sir.
Well, he's all yours, gentlemen.
May I examine your duffel bag, Driscoll?
Of course, sir.
The blouse is rather wet, isn't it?
Caught in the rain, sir.
Must have been quite a rain to go through the pockets like this.
It was, sir.
You're sure you didn't wash it yourself and pack it before it was dried?
No, sir. It was the rain, sir.
How do you explain the shirt, the cuffs cut off like this?
Came back from the laundry with the cuffs all frayed. I cut them off. I only used a shirt around the truck, sir.
I see.
Driscoll, does this handkerchief look familiar to you?
Like any other handkerchief, Inspector?
Thompson, the laundry marks. Here, collar of the shirt.
I see it.
We'll try again, Driscoll. Look at the laundry marks on the shirt and on the handkerchief. Seems to be yours, doesn't it?
I wouldn't know about laundry marks.
They're identical, aren't they?
Have you had a handkerchief like this recently?
All the army issue is the same, sir. We get a lot of trouble getting things back from the laundry. Someone else could have had this handkerchief.
Rather a careless laundry, Driscoll.
Sorry, sir. Yes, sir.
Have a look at this tarpaulin, Driscoll.
Yes, sir.
What's your guess about those stains?
Grease, sir.
That shape? That color?
Might be blood, sir.
This tarpaulin comes from your truck, Driscoll.
I never saw the stain, sir. Might be someone swapped this one for mine.
Driscoll, where were you on the 19th, 3 days ago?
Maintenance depot. Repairs. Leaky axle.
Did they repair it?
Well, they couldn't. Not in the time we had before we moved down here.
I see. Anything else, Stark?
Not at the moment.
Major, we'd appreciate it if you'd hold this man under escort. There are still a few inquiries to be made.
Yes, of course, Inspector.
Oh, Sergeant, in here, please.
There were still the loose ends on identification on the laundry problem. Driscoll wore horn-rimmed glasses. Inspector Thompson asked some more questions.
I see, Corporal. He wore army issue and suddenly he bought himself the horn frame. You joked with him about it and he didn't like it. Grew angry, did he?
Inspector Stark visited the regimental laundry depot.
No complaints from Gunner Driscoll about losing things for him. Never tore or frayed his shirts. I see. Thank you.
Stark stayed with the shirt. A battery made of Driscoll's had noticed the missing cuffs.
The night you rolled in here, you noticed the cuffs missing. That was the night of the 20th. Very good.
Inspector Thompson turned up an interesting item.
Say that again, Sergeant.
The night we came in here, we heard about those two in the woods. We were shooting the breeze about it in the day room. All at once, sir, Driscoll looks around and says, 10 to 1, there's a murderer in here, that's what.
And once again, a telephone.
Yes? Oh, it's for you, Inspector.
Thank you, Major. Inspector Thompson speaking. He did? I see. It's been checked at criminal records. Good. Very good. Yes, of course I wanted the word at once. Thank you very much.
They found something?
The crew we left at Payne turned up the second gas mask container. Metal, this one. Had a print on it. They checked in criminal records. The fingerprint belongs to an Oscar Driscoll. Served a term 8 years ago for molesting and impairing the morals of a minor. Oscar Driscoll, you're under arrest. The charge is willful murder of Kathy Hart and Doris Lyons on the afternoon of October the 19th.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum. The defense, of course, was insanity. The defense tried to prove that Driscoll suffered from schizophrenia, split personality, that he had no recollection of what he'd done and therefore no legal responsibility. The jury brought in its verdict and finally, this man died at the hands of the public executioner. There was apparently no doubt in the minds of the jury that this man had known and planned exactly what he'd done. At any rate, the khaki handkerchief remains in its usual place in Scotland Yard in the Black Museum. And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain as always obediently yours.
There you have a crime, a suspect, a conviction, and, as so often happened, an execution. From The Black Museum, the name of the piece, The Khaki Handkerchief. Next, it's The Witch's Tale, right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Using a script that they turned to a couple of times, tonight The Witch's Tale tells once again the story of the statue of Thor, in which we meet a talented sculptor who is an absolute louse, we are told. And his model for Thor, stupid perhaps, but likable and larger than life. And the sculptor has an ideal method with which to rid himself of his giant Swede so that he, the sculptor, can move in on the beautiful girlfriend of the aforementioned. It's all to be stirred in the cauldron for the witch's tale. Our story comes from April 22, 1937.
The Witch's Tale. The fascination of the eerie. Weird, blood-chilling tales told by old Nancy, the Witch of Salem, and Satan, her wise black cat. They're waiting for you, now.
Another 2 year old I be today. Yes, sir, 102 year old. Well, Satan, if you'll tell folks to douse their lights, we'll be getting down to business. That's it. Make it nice and dark. We want lots of shadow for this pretty bedtime story. Now, draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers. Gaze into them deep, and soon you'll see a tremendous barn-like room in New York City. It's called a studio. At one end stands a great big ugly man who's posing. In the center, a little handsome man is modeling an enormous heap of clay into a statue of a god. The old Norwegian god of strength and thunder. And that's what we're telling you about tonight. The statue of Thor. The statue of Thor.
Can you hold that pose another 5 minutes, Olaf?
You're Mr. Adding. I've been never tired than I've offered you.
You certainly have a treasure in Olaf, Neil. He's scarcely moved a finger in half an hour.
Yes, quite the perfect model. The poor chump hasn't brains enough to become tired.
Neil?
Well, that's been all right, Mr. Bingham. I don't mind them, Mr. Redding yokes. Most everyone yokes like that with Olaf. When I used to be wrestler, my manager say every day to me, Olaf, you big Swede, if you got brains in your head like you got muscles in your body, you'll be wrestling champion of the world.
But Olaf has a sense of humor too, Arnold. As a joke on his manager, he never became wrestling champion of anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, excuse, I should not laugh. It breaks the pose.
I don't care what you do with your face. It's your body I'm copying.
Yeah, I forget. My face is not so good.
All right for a comic Valentine, perhaps. But I'm working on the statue of a god.
Don't let him talk to you like that, Olaf. Your face is all right, and so is your brain. And you have the most superb body of any man I've ever seen.
Yeah? Your band talks sarcastic, Mr. Bingham. I don't like sarcastic, York.
Sarcastic?
That's enough for one day's work. You go and put your clothes on, Olaf.
So soon?
I'm bored. Come the same time tomorrow.
Yeah, I be here. Can I look at the work we do this afternoon?
Help yourself.
Oh, that statue. He been beautiful. And to think he been really me.
From the neck down, you're Thor the Thunderer.
Too bad my face been not so good. I would like him to be me all over.
I'll use my imagination and another model for the face. Go and put your clothes and get out of here.
Tomorrow we finish statue, maybe. You and me.
You know, he considers himself as much the creator of this figure as I am.
Better watch your nasty tongue with that fellow, Neil. If he ever discovers your insults aren't intended as jokes, he might break you in two.
He never discovers anything.
Yes, unfortunately, you have the ability to inspire devotion in people who should rightfully despise you. God only knows why. I know you're a supercilious prig, a selfish snob, an absolutely conscienceless libertine, yet I still put up with you.
That's because you hope to be around when just retribution overtakes me for my sins, I suppose.
No, I've ceased to hope for that.
Well, now, what do you think of my statue of Thor? Not that I value your opinion.
I don't expect you to. Well, it's like all your previous work. Magnificent in execution.
Thanks, I agree.
But like all your previous work, it lacks the very thing a true artist would have put into it.
Now you're going to tell me that it has no soul. Thor was a pagan old chap. He enjoyed life in those delightful days before souls were invented.
Oh, why won't you be serious about your work, Neil? You're a superb sculptor. If you wished, you might someday stand with the immortals.
The immortals were a very stupid lot who loved work to the exclusion of pleasure. Fame and the monument after I'm dead aren't nearly so tempting as good liquor and beautiful women while I'm alive. Oh, which reminds me. Have a drink.
Are you going to continue throwing your talents away?
I don't call it that. I play with art because it amuses me. If I took it seriously, it would cease to amuse.
So your entire life's to be simply a round of amusement?
And a quest for new sensations.
For a momentary thrill, a new sensation, I believe you'd commit a murder.
That's an idea. I'll recall your suggestion next time I'm terribly bored. Well, here's the crime.
I've been ready to go now, Mr. Anning.
So I see. Here's a man after your own heart, Arnold. A sober, conscientious worker who doesn't dally by the wayside. Note how rapidly he dressed, for example. Now he stands before us, Arnold, the perfect portrait of a well-dressed man.
Well, I go now. Tomorrow we finish that you may be, you and me?
I hope so. I'd like to have it ready for casting this month, if possible.
It been so beautiful, that statue. Too bad my face been not so good. I would like it to be me all over.
Yes, we've already settled that point. Get out, Olaf.
Yeah. I go now. Oh, Mr. Redding. Mr. Redding, I gonna get married.
Huh? Oh, Olaf, you are going to get married?
Yeah.
Well, this is a surprise.
Oh, my congratulations, Olaf.
I thank you, Mr. Bingham.
Where did you find her? In an asylum for the blind?
She come from Minnesota.
Well, what do you want me to do about it?
Mr. Redding, my Hedwig, she never see anything of me except my homely face. I like her to see this statue.
All right. Bring your girlfriend in sometime.
Could I bring her now?
Now?
Yeah. She been wait on the street outside to meet me when I get to work. I can have her here in just 1 minute.
Well, go and get her then.
Oh, I thank you.
Not at all. I'm curious to see what the woman looks like who can plan to marry you.
I come right back with Hedwig, Mr. Redding. I come right back.
Prepare yourself for a vision of beauty, Arnold, who wear number 13 shoes.
Neil, I know you've no humanity in your system, but try to remember you were bred a gentleman. Don't insult that poor devil's sweetheart when she gets here.
I'll accord her all the old-world courtesy a female should command. Such a female as would choose Olaf for a bridegroom.
Oh, then I shan't stay here to see you mock them.
I've never had an affair with a really ugly woman.
Neil!
Think of the fun it would be to steal big Olaf's sweetheart.
You're only joking, of course.
Am I? You lack all appreciation of the more subtle joys of life, Arnold. Why do you suppose I have that big idiot around me? Because he's my opposite in everything. Opposites attract, but they don't assimilate. In fact, there's constant war between them. It amuses me to prove the superiority of mind over matter, my type over his.
Be careful, such amusement doesn't become dangerous.
A small chance. If you recall your mythology, old chap, Thor, with all his giant strength and magic hammer, never proved a match for tiny Loki and his nimble brain.
He did at last. But then Odin came to his aid with the thunderbolts of justice.
I see you not only recall your mythology, but still believe in it. But don't be alarmed about Olaf, sweetheart. On mature consideration, I couldn't arouse an ardent interest in any female who will prove so unattractive.
This way, Hedwig. This way. We are here, Mr. Redding. Hedwig, I want you to meet my boss, Mr. Redding. This is Hedwig.
This?
Yeah. This time, Olaf make a joke. I bet you expect, Mr. Redding, that Hedwig will be homely just like me. I do not tell him, Hedwig, that you are more putty than a picture.
You're right, Olaf. This time, the joke's on me. Miss Hedwig, I can't express the great delight I have in meeting such a very lovely girl.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Redding. Olaf has told me lots about you.
You must learn lots more about me from myself.
Allow me to present Mr. Bingham.
Delighted.
How do you do?
All that make a York. He make a first-class York.
Splendid joke, Olaf. A capital joke. And it's driven away my boredom. It's promised a new sensation.
Neil.
I don't understand.
You will, Miss Hedwig, as we become acquainted.
Be sure you know this statue.
By all means. Miss Hedwig, gaze on Thor, the Thunderer.
He's me, Hedwig. My body.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You'll note the face is still unfinished. I'm using another model for that.
Please, Neil.
That's because my face is not so good. But the body, Hedwig, that is me.
Yes. Yours is the body of Thor, who was strongest of gods and men. No one could beat him. No one could take anything from him.
You heard that, Hedwig? I'm like that too, by golly. Any fella will find that out who tries to take your way.
No one ever dared take anything from Thor, except Loki.
Who was Loki?
Oh, just a weak little chap like me.
I shouldn't have come again, Neil. I'm afraid.
My dear Hedwig, Olaf hasn't brains enough to suspect us.
Oh, perhaps I wouldn't be so nervous if we weren't in the studio with that statue pacing us and watching us every time you kiss me.
It doesn't watch with Olaf's face.
Oh, but it has his huge body with all those bulging muscles.
Formidable, aren't they? Those hands could tear us into tiny bits.
Oh, don't say such things.
All right, since the remote prospect frightens you so much. But that clay model won't be here to bother your conscience much longer. It's finished now. Tomorrow I start to prepare the molds, and next week I'll cast it into bronze.
Oh, I know it's silly, but I'll feel easier when it's gone from here.
You're too much of a coward to properly enjoy this little idol of ours, my dear. One so afraid of being burned as you are shouldn't play with fire.
Oh, I know. I couldn't help myself. I'd never met a gentleman like you before.
Thank you.
Only for Timothy King, you. You don't understand his kind like I do. I was born in this country, but I'm Swedish too and know my people. You think men like Olaf are dumb, but they're not. And they're only easygoing until they learn someone's doing things against them.
But that's what gives this game its zest.
I'm just a game to you?
Of course not. I love you devotedly. Why, thanks to you, I've only been slightly bored. You've provided a new sensation.
Oh, you're so different from other men. I don't understand you, but I'm crazy about you, Neil. Oh, who's there?
Mr. Reddy.
Oh, it's only a butler.
Who did you think it was? What do you want, Warden?
I must see you at once, sir.
All right, come in. What's the matter? Why the excitement?
The big Swedish man, sir. Your model.
Oh,
shut up. What about him?
This is just the daughter inquiring for this lady.
He knows I'm here?
He said he had reason to believe you were here, madam. I was able to allay his suspicions and send him away. But there was a nasty look in his eyes, though.
Oh, he knows, Neil. He'll kill us both.
He doesn't know, or Warden wouldn't have been able to get rid of him. The game becomes more interesting.
Oh, I am just a game to you. Everything is.
Warden, have Peters draw all the curtains on the limousine and bring it to the carriage door for Miss Geilenborg.
At once, sir.
If Olaf's still hanging around, you'll be in that car and away before he has time to investigate. But we mustn't see one another again, Hedwig, until after this statue is cast.
Until after the statue?
Then there'll be no danger. Loki always bested Thor by striking first.
I don't understand you.
I'm planning an, as yet, untried sensation. One that Mr. Bingham suggested the day I met you. Olaf and I will play a little game, and Olaf is sure to lose. So, Olaf, the joke's on you again.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Radding, you are right. I got no brain. I've been so ashamed to suspect bad things about you and Hedwig.
I forgive you.
But I cannot forgive myself. Mr. Radding, I looked for you to kill you with my two bare hands.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't find me until after you'd cooled down and heard my explanation. For those hands of yours could tear a little chap like me to pieces.
Oh, I've been so ashamed.
Ah, it's all over now. Forget it. There's the foundry, Olaf. Hear the furnace roar?
It's been awful good of you to bring me here.
You and I created that statue of Thor together, and I couldn't let it be cast in bronze without you there to see.
I've been terrible excited.
I'll make sure you don't miss a thing. Hello, Brody.
Good morning to you, Mr. Radden.
Have you got everything ready?
Aye. And the mould is your fine statue's waiting ready in the picture. When you say the word, we draw the channel plug and let the molten metal run.
Ah, the bronze has already reached the liquid state.
Yes, sir. I timed it for the hour you said you'd be here. Shall I draw the plugs now?
Not just yet.
My friend here has never seen a statue cast. I want to show him around first. You and the boys get outside and have a smoke. I'll call you when I want you.
Much obliged, sir. A breath of outside air will help a wee bit. Come on, lad. Smoke off.
We'll go up on the bridge above the furnace, all that.
By Yumini, it's been hot in here.
It'll be hotter where I'm taking you. Up these iron stairs, Olaf.
Hey, come.
In that pit is the mold of our statue. You'll see that later. It's connected by channels to this furnace. This is called a reverberating furnace, Olaf. The fire is at that end, below the chimney. Under this long brick roof, the molten metal lies. It's very hot under that roof, Olaf.
I bet you. It's been plenty hot up here.
We're just above the roof now. From this bridge, the cold bronze is thrown into those hoppers and down into the charging holes.
What been charging holes?
I'll show you. This lever controls their covering.
My, such heat!
With the cover up, you can realize how hot it is inside. Underneath that hole is a trough of molten metal.
Yumping yumini!
And that hole is just large enough to admit a strong man's body. Good thing to know if you ever want to commit a perfect murder.
You've been always joking, but I don't want to commit no murder. Close up that hole, it's been too hot.
Look over the rail and see before I close it up.
I've been too hot to come so close.
Aren't you interested in the casting of your statue?
Yeah, that's right. I got to look.
Lean over the rail. Here, just above the hopper.
I've been dizzy from this heat. I'm afraid I lose my balance.
I won't let you lose your balance. Lean over the rail, Olaf. That's right. And now, you brazen fool.
You trip my legs. Don't push. I fall. Don't wait a hot minute.
The joke's on you again, my friend.
What happened?
Matter?
We heard an awful scream.
Scream? Oh, I have the charging hole open. The furnace roared so loud, I called for you at the top of my lungs.
You screamed? You calling me?
Yes. Let me replace this cover so we can talk in a normal tone. There. That's better.
Where's that friend you had with you, Mr. Redden?
It was too hot in here for him. He just went out the other door. Said he was going back to town.
Ah. Did you call for us to pull the plugs new?
Yes. But with that hole open, I may have cooled off the metal a bit. Better heap up the fire, Brody, and give it another 5 minutes to make absolutely certain everything will be all right. Then let the metal run into the mold.
Just as you say, sir. Come on, lad. Heap up that fire now. Okay.
Wonder if my statue of Thor will have what all my other works lack. I've given it what Arnold calls a soul. Awfully good of you, Arnold, to come and help me break off this mold.
Oh, not at all. You know how curious I am to see the statue in finished bronze.
The casting went off without a single hitch. I'm sure the finished work will satisfy our fondest expectations. And I expect much, Arnold. I took your former criticisms to heart. I really labored to give old Thor a soul.
I can't imagine you laboring at anything.
That's because you don't know me so well as you think you do.
But why Olaf's not here? I didn't think anything could keep him away when his statue reached completion.
Yes, his statue. I'm worried about Olaf. You know, they tell me at his boarding house that he hasn't been seen since the day I took him to the foundry.
Doesn't Hedwig know where he is?
She hasn't the vaguest idea. No one has, apparently. He's completely disappeared.
That's funny. But I imagine he'll turn up. He may be off on a drunk somewhere. You'll never lose a chap like Olaf.
No. It wouldn't be justice for anything tragic to happen to him. And you believe in justice, Arnold?
I told you I ceased to believe in it. Because nothing ever happens to you.
Yes, I remember. We have the head mold completely loosened now. Help me take it off and we'll expose the face. Careful of the surface underneath. Now.
I've got it. There it goes. Neil.
God!
That face is Olaf's. I thought you used another model for the head.
I did. That's not the face of Thor I made.
Well, then, what happened in the casting? Man, you're pale, you're shaking. What's the matter?
Nothing, nothing. Arnold, does it seem to you that statue's eyes are moving?
Yes. They seem to follow you. That bronze face seems alive.
You're imagining things about that statue, Arnold. Olaf's face is the one I muddled on it, and those eyes don't seem to move.
You're lying, Neil. The first shock's over now, and you're pulling your nerves together, but you've given yourself away. You turned ghastly white when first you looked on that copper face. You're trembling now with fear. You still can feel those eyes on you.
You're mad. Metal eyes can't move. What reason have I to be afraid?
I'd know that better if Olaf's disappearance was explained. You were with him last. What did you do with
him? I didn't do anything with him. If you're insinuating I killed him, explain what I did with the body. That's the thing you've got to find when you accuse a man of murder. Find that. Find that.
I'm going to the police. Perhaps they'll help me find him.
Call them if you like. They can't prove anything. No one can prove anything. Nothing can harm me. Nothing. Now get out of here. Leave me alone so I can think.
I don't know why or how you killed that man, but I know that when you did it, you believed justice could be cheated. I'm beginning to believe in justice again, and so are you.
Get out, you fool. Get out. Get out.
I'm going to leave you with your conscience and that statue's knowing eyes.
Get out. Get out. Get out. Oh, God. Olaf's face instead of the one I modeled. Maybe his soul is in that statue. Oh, no, that's rot. With those eyes, my back turned, but I can feel them on me. Thor never proved a match for Loki until Odin came to his aid with thunderbolts of justice. Ah, that's madness. Thor! It must be going to rain. It's thundering. Just natural thunder. What's that? What's that? Who's there?
Miss Geilenborg is calling, sir. This way, miss.
Neil, dear.
Come in, come in. Borden, leave us.
Yes, sir.
You're not angry because I'm here, Neil. You told me not to come again until the statue was finished. I couldn't stay away any longer. It seemed I just had to be with you.
Why did it seem that way? Why?
Because I was lonesome for you, I suppose.
Yes, yes, of course, that was it. It wasn't because he wanted us together.
He? What do you mean?
Nothing.
Neil, have you heard from Olaf?
Yes, I heard from him today.
Where is he?
He's where he can't hurt me. Can't hurt me. I'm glad you came. I didn't want to be alone. And the statue's finished, Hedvig.
Is that it there?
Yes.
Why haven't you taken off the mold?
I have from the face. The body's still held prisoner.
I want to see it.
No, no. Don't go near it. Don't look at its face. Don't let its eyes see you.
Neil, what's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing.
You haven't even kissed me yet.
I'll kiss you now. I'm not afraid. Door!
Why did you push me away?
That thunder startled me.
Thunder?
Yes. There must be quite a storm outside.
The sun was shining when I came in. I heard no thunder.
You heard no...
No.
Then it's in this room. Ah, it's coming from the statue.
The statue?
Look!
What?
The mold is cracking. It's falling from the bronze.
Oh, the statue is moving. Oh, it has all its face.
And it has all its soul. I put it there. Hand for the thunderer. He waited to repay till you and I were here together.
Oh, it's coming towards us. Help!
His eyes are on me. I can't move.
Ah! It's raining on its own!
For me!
And for me!
It's cracking!
Cracking!
Ah! It seems, Olaf, the joke's on me. At last!
Well, that's the end of that scene. And the moral is, don't get too fresh with great big Swedes. You folks come see us on me birthday and we'll have another cheerful yarn.
That was The Statue of Thor from The Witch's Tale from April 22nd, 1937. And the finale for old-time radio drama for this Sunday night. But I'm Norman Gilliland, hoping you'll join me, same time, same station, for more next weekend, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.